Live from the In the Room studios located in the Net Carrier and Cloud, this is the VOC Nation Radio Network.
This is D'Lo Brown, and right here, right now, you better recognize that I am down with the VOC Nation. Recognize that.
Hey guys, Brady Hicks here, Pro Wrestling Illustrated contributing writer and the host of In the Room, TheBradyHicks.com, and for the first time ever, VOCNation.com. So happy to be part of the family. Join us each and every Tuesday night, 9, 8 Central, VOCNation.com, TheBradyHicks.com, myself, DJ, Derek McDonald, Ray Bogus, Anthony Sarlo, Kathy Fitz, breaking down all that's going on in wrestling today, and so much more.
Okay, Philadelphia parents, listen up. Do you have a child in the house that's just about to learn how to drive? Well, you got to do this. You got to head over to DuncanSchoolOfDriving.com. Best of Bucks County 2013. Keep that insurance down. Keep them accident-free. 215-639-1990. They're endorsed by the Pennsylvania Police Officers Association, DuncanSchoolOfDriving.com.
Business owners, prepare to take charge. Get the latest trends in business and technology every Tuesday at 12 p.m. Eastern, presented by NetCarrier. Tweet your business questions in advance at NetCarrier using the hashtag TakeChargeTuesday or call live toll-free at 1-855-VOC-RADIO.
Hey, I'm the Mouth of the South, Jimmy Hart, telling you fans worldwide to visit VOCNation.com. VOC Nation gives you top-notch interviews, insightful blogs, and, of course, the VOC Wrestling Nation radio program. The VOC Wrestling Nation radio program is live every Wednesday with the hottest guests, the latest news, and lots of fun from the greatest team in wrestling media headed by the voice of choice. Hey, take it from me, the Mouth of the South, Jimmy Hart. VOCNation.com is the place to go, baby.
Hola, hola, hola. I am Shelly Funtime Martinez.
And I am Dazzling Danielle.
And together we are
the Martinez Girls.
Tune in on VOC Nation at 7 p.m. Eastern every Saturday. And until then, Danielle, I and you are Audi 5000. Adios, toodles.
The godless voice of Crab Nation.
None of these assholes would have the balls
to say any of this to anyone live.
I get hard as one of them stones. I'm going to hurl at a homosexual.
He's got 6 ounces of weed,
and he's saving his roaches?
Bangable and diabetic.
Park the car keys.
This is Stevie Wonder.
Free speech zone should just be the air, motherfucker.
Catch the crowds on Crab Nation Live weekdays.
Noon to 2 p.m. Pacific, 3 to 5 p.m. Eastern on the VOC Nation.
Entertainment with an attitude.
Fear is just one enemy.
This is the VOC Nation Radio Network.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome all to the second edition of VOC Nation WCW Retro. Now, of course, I'm not Dan Colachico. Dan couldn't be here tonight. I'm Brady Hicks, the general manager for VOC Nation's programming and the host of In the Room Tuesday nights right here on the network. And guys, you know, I'm very excited to be here tonight. I'll be honest with you. I'm going to lay it out there. Just up front, I just want to put it out there for all of you to know. And unfortunately for my co-host, this has got to be... I hope you're not too disappointed in me, Stro. We've got WCW's legendary maestro with us as well. He's my co-host for the evening. I'm very excited about that. Stro, I want to lay it out there. And it is with a little bit of remorse that I have to say... I was a WWF guy, man. I'm sorry. I'm looking forward to talking WCW with everybody, but forgive my ignorance if I don't know everything.
Oh, it's quite a riot, you know. I mean, there's fans for everything in the wrestling business. So, you know, it is what it is.
Yeah, well, it is what it is. I'll tell you what. One thing that I loved about the NWA and later WCW, and I think any fan could say this now, especially given the way the current wrestling landscape is, competition was very good. And competition was very fierce there for a lot of years. And fans had a lot of alternatives and a lot of choices for what they wanted to watch. And unfortunately, that isn't always necessarily the case today, Stro.
Oh, yeah, that's so true. I mean, you know, back in the day, I mean, there was like, you know, the territories and, you know, from there, you know, even – you know, go a little bit further. I mean, you had, you know, companies like, you know, WWE, WCW, ECW, and so forth that were in great competitors with each other. And, you know, it kept things interesting, you know, because it gave a little something for every type of wrestling fan.
Well, I'll tell you what, it certainly did. Let me give out the phone numbers right now. If anyone wants to call in, I'd love to talk to you here tonight, so would the Stro. Toll free, 855-VOC-RADIO. That's 855-862-7234. Call in, be part of the show. I was given very strict instructions tonight, Maestro. I was told to not talk about the Ted Turner purchase of WCW on. So I guess we're sticking strictly 80s here today, which should be very interesting. Certainly a hotbed time in wrestling. I mean, you had some of the top stars in the world, Ric Flair, Dusty Rhodes, Ricky Steamboat, the Road Warriors. The list goes on and on. Stro, you were a fan of this period. Am I correct?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, I mean, it was so hot. I mean, the wrestling world as a whole was just on fire.
Well, let's talk about that a little bit. I mean, because from my perspective, as a WWF fan, like I said, you know, WrestleMania 1 comes to us in 1985. And, you know, WrestleMania 2, WrestleMania 3, you know, it proceeds and it gets bigger and bigger and bigger. But there was this whole other thing going on down in South Carolina, you know, down in Georgia, Florida, all over the country, really. This Southern style of wrestling was emerging, and it was brought to my attention this week when WWE actually added Clash of the Champions to the network. It was an interesting time for sure.
Oh, no doubt. I mean, you know, while you had guys like Hulk Hogan just going wild, the Hulkamania there, you know, for WWE during that time, and you had, you know, Ric Flair, you know, Dusty Rhodes, the Four Horsemen, Road Warriors, the Rock and Roll Express, Midnight Express, hitting it strong, you know, with the NWA, and it all started, you know, with momentum going with them with the Starrcade, original Starrcade, 1983, where Ric Flair defeated Harley Race for the NWA one heavyweight title inside a steel cage there in Greensboro.
Now, is it fair to say that Ric Flair was every bit as big of a star as Hulk Hogan back in the day? Because there are a lot of people that would say that.
Oh, no doubt, no doubt. See, during that time, I mean, Ric Flair and Hulk Hogan were the two top draws, and which a lot of critics and skeptics, you know, wish that they wouldn't have got together sooner for a big time, you know, pay-per-view or big event that would have really drew big and drew a lot of money.
Well, yeah, no, certainly. I think this is just my opinion, and tell me if I'm wrong. I'm an ignorant, like I said, an ignorant northerner. I didn't necessarily actively follow, certainly during the Crockett days, all this stuff, as I mentioned. My perspective, looking back on it, is that the NWA back then was where the wrestling was, you know? That was where they were going 60 minutes, 90 minutes, on almost a nightly basis. That's how I perceive it. I don't know if it's true, but that's how I perceive it. Long before there was an Iron Man match at WrestleMania, the NWA was doing it.
Oh, no doubt. I mean, you had guys like Dusty Rhodes, Harley Race, and Ric Flair, and the Funks going like one-hour matches like every night. You know, Dick Murdoch and Cowboy Bob Orton Jr. And I remember there's a time even Ric Flair stated in his book that when he had a feud with Ricky Morton for the title, that they went for 1 week straight of one-hour time limit draws.
Yeah, how about that? And it's funny because, like, as the fan that I am, I tend to associate, like, say, Ricky Morton as, like, a tag team guy, you know, a Rock and Roll Express. But, I mean, there was a time when he was going all out with the big boys.
Oh, absolutely. What's so wild about that, this is the age, like, before the Rey Mysterios, before the Daniel Bryans, you know what I mean? I mean, Ricky Morton was kicking butt, you know, with his size and ability, you know, even then, in the 80s.
So who was your consummate favorite from this time period? I mean, I have a bunch that I rattled off, and each one of them are kind of special to me. I think throw Ric Flair out, like, because I think everybody would say Ric Flair. But, I mean, who from that era really jumped out at you? Who should we be talking about if you're talking 1980s, NWA, Jim Crockett, all that? I mean, who would it be, Stro?
You know, you really had some great wrestlers, not only can wrestle, but can talk and captivate an audience. I mean, Ricky the Dragon Steamboat. You had Dusty Rhodes, who's one of the greatest interviews in the business, hands down. Rock and Roll, great tag team wrestling, Rock and Roll Express, the Midnight Express. Great managers, of course, Jim Cornette, Sir Oliver Humperdinck. The Funks, Dory Funk Jr., Terry Funk. I mean, the Briscoes, Jimmy Valiant. I mean, who was also, you know, even before then, tag team champions in the old WWE with, you know, Johnny Valiant, with Captain Lou Albano. So, I mean, you had so much talent during that time. And even before Dusty Rhodes got his, you know, got his fame with Mid-Atlantic Wrestling and all that, I mean, you had Jimmy Valiant, you had Pistol Pez Watley, you know, Roddy Piper, you know what I mean, Blackjack Mulligan, the Andersons, Ole and Arn, and then later, well, actually before then was Ole and Gene, then Ole and Arn, and going way back even before then, there was Ole, Gene, and Lars, you know, it was almost like this is like way before the Freebirds came along, you know, so.
Yeah, it's interesting to me. I mean, you throw a lot of names out there, and each and every one I think is so special in so many different ways. But it's so interesting to me, Stro, because each of those names also contributed to a certain extent to the WWF success in the late 80s as well. So I'm assuming with guys jumping back and forth or whatever, why wasn't the NWA more well known? I mean, is it just because of the aggressive stance that the WWF took at the time?
Well, during that time, I mean, WWE was like really, you know, on fire up north, mm-hmm. you know, with Hulkamania, and you know, they were in the process of getting the top guys from different territories. You know, it's like Junkyard Dogs, the Jake the Snake Roberts, the Rick Rudes, and all that were in NWA pretty much, you know, until they, up to the point where they tried to expand, pretty much kept, you know, their base in the Southern Territory. So they're really only the popular down south. I mean, it was not only just the wrestlers and managers and personalities, but you had the great commentators, Bob Cottle, Gordon Solie, Tony Schiavone. You know what I mean?
Right. No, it was an amazing time. Is it safe to say, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong here, because I'm ignorant. I don't necessarily understand everything that went on during that time period, but correct me if I'm wrong here. Is it safe to say that the NWA kind of stuck by the rules and the WWF at the time didn't? the rules of the territory system and all that. Is that the basis of why the WWF kind of took off and the NWA within a couple years was becoming WCW?
Well, the NWA pretty much stayed with tradition, right?
Right.
The wrestling tradition heritage, whereas the WWE, you know, even to this day, was more about entertainment and, you know, the mighty dollar, basically. So, but it was just like two different worlds, two different breeds of animal, you know?
Yeah, I totally agree with you. And to this day, I think people still revere a lot of what the NWA and later WCW did is like, well, you know, the WWE or WWF or whatever, that's entertainment. That can be fun, you know, but that's mainstream. That's less for the wrestling fan. What the NWA was doing is a continuation for what they've been doing for 100 years, you know, back
right.
from the days of George Hackenschmidt. And before that, Strongman in the Circus and stuff like that. Like this, that was the tradition that was wrestling for so long, and they were just keeping that up.
I mean, you had guys like Abdullah Butcher and Bruiser Brody doing hardcore matches and stuff like way before, you know, the ECW fame got started and all that. So they pretty much set the standards for what later on we know now as hardcore as well.
And you're right again. You're nailing it tonight. I'm a Philly guy, right? So like, yeah, I used to go to the Spectrum at the WWE. You know, the WWF would come to the Spectrum, where the big arena. You know, WCW would do the Convention Center.
Mm-hmm.
But they always sold out. They always did very well. My understanding is Philadelphia, of like the northern cities. Philadelphia, Baltimore, D.C. always did very, very well with WCW. Maybe like a kind of like a fringe state almost. You know, like the city could have gone either way for a long, long time there. I can remember, actually, like you talk about Bruiser Brody, you talk about Abdullah the Butcher. I can remember the Tri-State Wrestling Alliance, Joel Goodhart, a good friend of mine, used to run, and he'd bring in these, well, for lack of a better word, savages. I mean, he'd bring in the original Sheik. He'd bring in Cactus mm-hmm. Jack when Cactus Jack was scary. Abdullah the Butcher, mm-hmm. Bruiser Brody. He'd run bus trips, too. Like, they'd go all over the country to go see these guys. Another good friend of mine, the Blue Meanie. I'm name-dropping all over the place tonight. I don't know why, but I guess just to illustrate this. But, like, the Blue Meanie used to, like, pay money to hop on a bus, go down to Nashville, to see Bruiser Brody take on Abdullah the Butcher in basically what's a knife fight.
Right.
And this was, I can see, looking back on it, like maybe I wasn't exposed to it when I was younger, but I could see why this would be something that would really excite a lot of wrestling fans, as opposed to, not to pick on any, but as opposed to say like, watching the Birdman Coco Beware down at the Spectrum in a 3-minute match.
Yeah, I mean, like back in, Terry Funk, you see Terry Funk and Dusty Rhodes have some like knockdown, drag out brawls, and they'd get blood like every night just about.
And I can remember too, I don't know if you remember this, I can remember a time when, for example, at the first Starcade, you know, we think Rowdy Piper, WrestleMania, Greg the Hammer Valentine, WrestleMania. I mean, a vicious dog collar fight. I've seen this match probably 5 or 6 times now. It's one of my favorites from that time period for any promotion. And the NWA, Jim Crockett, they were doing this.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Tommy Rich and Buzz Sawyer had, like, one of the most craziest feuds ever in Georgia Championship Wrestling, which they were an NWA affiliate at the time. And I remember Roddy Piper and Buzz Sawyer having some knockdown dragouts as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's I'll tell you what, let's go to the phones. We actually have a caller. Area code 516. I think I know who this is. I suspect this is the traditionalist. This is Derek from In the Room. Am I correct?
Yes, and I'm sitting here watching the hockey game because the team from my state is still playing in the playoffs.
Go Montreal. That's all I can say, bro.
Right.
Now, what's going on, Derek? I mean, aside from hockey, I know you're a huge hockey fan, but tonight we're talking, of course you are, tonight we're talking WCW, or more specifically the NWA Jim Crockett era. What is, like, your consummate memory from that period? Do you even have one? You were a baby back then.
Yeah, I was born in 86. But,
wow.
Like, my grandmother's from Georgia, so she grew up watching all that stuff, and my mom and my dad. So they would tell me about things, and thanks to the network and Classics on Demand, I've gone back and watched some of the things they've spoken about. So growing up, I knew the Road Warriors when they were really, really big and scary. They were just beating the poor jobbers up. I fell in love with the Midnight Express. I remember they would come in and they had the theme music and they would beat guys up. And the whole time they were in the ring beating guys up, Jim Cornette was at the desk just talking about anything and everything. And I love that. Like, even now on the network, I'll watch that stuff. I'll watch Dusty Rhodes and Magnum and all that other stuff. It kind of sucks that I didn't get to live it because, like I said, I was born right dab in the middle of it. But Tully Blanchard and his promos and when he slapped Baby Doll and Dusty Rhodes. Like, I remember all these things just based off old videotapes and YouTube
Wow.
and all these things. So I love the old NWA.
That's so funny to hear all that. In so many ways, you're more equipped to host this show than I am. It's terrible, but I mean, here we are. So,
imagine that.
Yeah, I know. The esteemed wrestling journalist. do you have like a favorite performer from that era? We're throwing Ric Flair out, I think, because I think most people would say Ric Flair.
I like Ricky Steamboat. I thought he was great, and I also liked Tully Blanchard because he was the type of heel that if he was out in the mid '90s to the late '90s, people would cheer for the guy because he wasn't as big as everybody else, but he could talk. And when it came time to fight, he would fight. And he had Baby Doll, and he had JJ, and they would come in with the Rolex watches, and you know, Baby Doll was the perfect 10. I love Tully Blanchard. He's probably my favorite performer, and only thing I've never seen him wrestle live on television. I've only seen old tapes, but if I had to pick one guy, it'd be Tully.
Well, Tully, I mean, Stro, correct me if I'm wrong, but, like, there's a guy that was ahead of his time. Like, if you think about it, if he had come along maybe during the Attitude Era, I think he could have been a huge star.
Oh, he'd be a hit. It's funny because even when they talk about, like, the Four Horsemen and everything, you know, even they had, like, a underground following, right?
Right.
But Tully was the one guy that everybody couldn't stand. No matter where they went, Tully was a true heel. True and true.
Imagine being the heat magnet in that group, you know?
Right. but what a great wrestler he was. I mean, just is amazing.
And I totally concur, Derek, by the way, that, like, Tully Blanchard, he just had this way on the mic. Like, he'd start talking, and you just wanted to, like, throw trash at him right away.
Yeah.
You just hate him.
I remember being a kid and watching some of the old tapes my brother had, and I was like, you know, in my head, this guy's a jerk. Like, why is Baby Doll with him? And then he hit her, and he got JJ going off. Like, I didn't hate many wrestlers growing up. But watching Tully Blanchard on tape, I hated him.
That means he did his job well.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Stro, I wanted to ask you, and this is something I actually wanted to ask you before, and I'd love to hear your opinion on this. I mean, Gorgeous George, the original, obviously a relative of yours, came up during the golden era of television. How do you think he would have fared in the 80s? Like, do you think he would have been as big of a star? Or would he have been overshadowed by guys like Ric Flair and Dusty Rhodes?
Oh, you know, I think no matter where you would put him, I would think he would definitely be the attention getter. Because he was just he just opened up a lot of eyes even back in the day, you know what I mean? So, I mean, no matter what area you put him in, I mean he was just so different from everybody else, you know.
Sure, yeah. I've often wondered that, but you do raise a good point. I because back in the 50s, like, the TV censors were so crazy, you know, and I know that there was an element of controversy to what he was doing, so I always kind of wondered if that helped make him what he was, you know?
Right. Oh, a feud with him and Flair would have been money.
Oh, my, yeah, absolutely. Derek, how much would you pay for that?
The feud, Gorgeous George versus Ric Flair?
Yeah.
I'm kind of cheap, but I'd pay a pay-per-view. I'd purchase a pay-per-view. I've never seen Gorgeous George, but, like, anybody I know who's been watching wrestling for a long, long time, like, anybody maybe 60 or older, the first name you hear about is Gorgeous George. Like, oh, I remember watching Gorgeous George on television. So apparently he was a big deal, and the guy was ahead of his time.
I was born in 1978, right? I got a later start with wrestling. I didn't start until I was about 12 years old. And one of the first angles I saw on TV was an old WWF angle where Earthquake attacked Hulk Hogan, took him out of action for a couple months, and they built toward a huge SummerSlam match. When I sat down with my grandmother and I was watching that angle, you should have seen her, like, go off about how it was nothing like the days of Gorgeous George. What would even cause her to say 40 years later that Earthquake and Hulk Hogan is nothing like Gorgeous George? Like, to me, that's like a duh kind of thing. But I don't know. It always struck me as funny. Anyway, I think let's regroup here. We're going to take a commercial break, get that out of the way. Toll free 855 VOC Radio. If you want to call in, be part of the show. 855-862-7234. Thank you to Derek for calling in. Stro, we'll be back on the other side. We'll take some calls, and we'll talk some more Crockett and NWA and WCW and all that fun stuff. Be right back.
Live from the In the Room studios located in the Net Carrier and Cloud, this is the VOC Nation Radio Network.
Hey everyone, it is your favorite knockout, Mickey James, and you're listening to the VOC Nation.
Hey there, hi there, ho there. Thanks for coming on down. It's Save Wrestling, the podcast, and the business making town. I am your award-winning hostess with the mostest, Shelly Funtime Martinez, and she is my co-host, Dazzling Danielle.
Woo! Hello out there.
And together we are the Martinez Girls. You finally did it. And you can join us here Monday, new time, 6 p.m. Eastern on the VOC Nation as we save wrestling together, Danielle. Fighting crime.
Hey guys, Brady Hicks here, Pro Wrestling Illustrated contributing writer and the host of In the Room, thebradyhicks.com, and for the first time ever, vocnation.com. So happy to be part of the family. Join us each and every Tuesday night, 9, 8 central, vocnation.com, thebradyhicks.com, myself, DJ, Derek McDonald, Ray Bogus, Anthony Sarlo, Kathy Fitz, breaking down all that's going on in wrestling today, and so much more.
Hey, it's me, the mouth of the South, Jimmy Hart. Netcarrier has many great products and services to increase your bottom line. Be sure to ask your Netcarrier representative about our hosted PBX. Call Netcarrier today for a free analysis of your phone bills. 877-255-7733. That's right, 877-255-7733. Call now.
It's not easy being an IT today.
Data is growing exponentially, technology is changing at an accelerating pace, and the consequences of unplanned downtime are more serious than ever. StorageHive helps eliminate these risks by automating all the data protection and disaster recovery for your laptops, servers, and virtual systems through a single provider. StorageHive can help you free up more time, recover faster, and improve the reliability of your backup process. Visit StorageHive.com.
The most polarizing personalities worldwide. This is the VOC Nation Radio Network.
Looking for a DJ? Looking for someone to host your event? Then look no further. Philadelphia's hottest DJ and host, The Voice of Choice. The Voice of Choice has hosted the hottest events in the tri-state area. Book The Voice of Choice for all your karaoke, conventions, and parties. Go to www.vocnation.com for more information or email the Voice of Choice at voc@vocnation.com.
Are you getting lost in the cloud? Is technology moving too fast for you? Find your way at netcarrier.com. Ride the NCloud and soar above your competition.
This is Buggy Nova, your Candyland princess, and I want everyone to know that I love VOCNation.com.
Hey, how's it going? This is Amy Dumas, but you may know me as Lita. You're listening to the VOC Nation.
Welcome back to WCW Retro right here on the VOC Nation Radio Network, VOCNation.com. I'm Brady Hicks. I've got with me the maestro from WCW as well as my in-the-room co-host, Derek McDonald. We're still taking callers. We'll be on for another half an hour or so. 855-VOC-RADIO. That's the toll-free number courtesy of Net Carrier, 855-862-7234. And during the break, guys, off air, we were talking, and I want to bring up the Crockett Cup, because I remember that being a huge deal. I mean, Stro, was this tournament everything that I remember?
Oh, yeah. It was like a big thing. Once a year, they would get together and put some of the best tag teams from all over to compete for the annual Crockett Cup.
So then the winner would get like a trophy, I think?
Right.
Okay. And I have like the earliest memories. I just remember thinking that the NWA is really doing like a cool thing, showcasing a lot of like tag teams that I had never really seen, you know, and there was some international flair to it as well. It really jumped out at me.
Right.
Derek, do you have any memories from that, from the Crockett Cup, from that era? I think the first one was at a Starcade, wasn't it?
Yeah, and to make some people out there feel even older, I think the first one happened the year I was born. but my favorite one was the one that Sting and Lex Luger won, only because, like, growing up I loved Sting. And you would see teams like you said, Sting and Luger, the Sheep Herders were in the one, Sting and Luger one, I believe, the Bushwhackers. But you would see these teams of people like, you know, Larry Zbysko is on there. And I remember, I'm like, once again, I'm watching these tapes as a kid in the mid-90s. And I'm like, the announcer from Nitro was a wrestler. Like, but it was like so many there was so many crazy teams, and that's the first time I saw the Fantastics or the Varsity Club, which was, you know, Rotunda and
Wyndham, right?
Rick Steiner.
Okay.
Rick Steiner. And they were managed by Kelvin Sullivan for some strange reason. But it was when wrestling was in the golden age of tag teams, because you had those guys down in NWA, and then you had, you know, the guys in New York. You had Brett and Jim Neidhart and all those guys. So it was a cool concept. It didn't stay around very long. But supposedly you got a trophy and you got $1 million, which I always thought was a little crap. But it was a cool concept, and it's sad that it's gone. I guess WWE doesn't have enough tag teams to do it nowadays. But, you know, a lot of cool things happened in the NWA, and that was one.
I do definitely. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Stro.
Oh yeah, and along with all that, I mean, they had some like great singles matches. I remember watching one with Ric Flair and Barry Windham for the world title at one of the Crockett Cups tournaments, and it would go on for like it was like a couple night deal, you know, a two night deal basically, you know, when they would have those Crockett Cup tournaments. And what made Sting and Lex Luger winning the Crockett Cup so special that year was the fact that Magnum TA was in their corner, and just right after, you know, his big accident.
Oh wow!
You know, so it was pretty emotional when they won it that year.
Wow! Yeah, I actually remember reading about that in my old Pro Wrestling Illustrated, having never seen it. It's definitely something that I want to go and find and check out now on the WWE Network. I remember Sting and Luger winning. And at the time, they were both kind of like the young up-and-comers, you know, in the company. Neither one had held a world title. Neither one had gone 60 minutes really with Flair that I know of. I could be wrong about that. But the feeling, and totally deservedly so, I think, Derek, is that those two guys were going to be cornerstones of the company for a long time.
Yeah, I always ask my dad, because like I said, I grew up, I loved Sting, and I know he kind of came towards the tail end of the NWA right before they switched over to WCW, and I would always ask him, like, how big was Sting back then? Like, and he would tell me Sting was like the young guy, like when Rock came in, or if you want to compare him to maybe a Roman Reigns of today, like he was that guy, and when you saw him, you just knew he might not be there yet, but he's going to be a superstar. And I guess leading up to the Crockett Cup, that's where Sting was, and Luger kind of had, you know, the affiliation with the Horsemen, and he was kind of becoming a big deal after that. But Sting was a really big deal, and I think a lot of people don't understand that because he was in WCW, but he was supposed to be their answer to Hulk Hogan, I believe. I could be wrong, but I think that's what he was, you know, they were setting him up to be.
Lex Luger?
No, Sting.
Oh, yeah, okay. I was going to say that, actually, I've talked to Bill after about this, and there were a lot of people at the time, especially at that magazine, like on the editorial staff, Pro Wrestling Illustrated, that kind of thought that it was only a matter of time before Lex Luger became maybe like the next Hulk Hogan, you know, that he was going to take the wrestling landscape into the 90s after Hulk Hogan started to fade.
Now, I was around, but obviously I was too young to remember. Is there any specific reason why it didn't happen? Did he just not connect with people, or like was there a reason behind him not becoming this huge superstar?
I mean, what do you think, Stro? I mean, I have some opinions on maybe why it never took off quite, but I mean, it's a tough. He had a lot of potential.
Yeah. I don't think, you know, his rise didn't really come full swing until like when the WCW started to come forth and all that, and then later on with his brief stint, you know, with WWE. So, but during this time, you know, with the NWA, you know, the time with him when he was, you know, with Sting and everything, you know, he, you know, like you said, he was just pretty much coming up. You know, the Sting just had that it factor. You know, I mean, people would just love Sting, man. I mean, he was just he was the man back then.
And I can remember, you guys will appreciate this as well. I can remember reading my old Pro Wrestling Illustrated in the doctor's office, little kid, and the cover of that particular magazine, a big face of Sting. You know, he had just gone 60 minutes with Ric Flair, I believe, on Clash of the Champions, and the little inset picture in the top corner was the Warrior, who was Sting's former tag team partner. And I can remember this old guy in the waiting room of the doctor's office noticing that I'm reading the magazine and come up to me and start talking to me about how they were like a tag team, and it's so cool that they both rose to the top of their professions in each of the two major companies. And that was something as a little kid I didn't realize. You know, I couldn't wrap my head around that, but it was interesting to me.
Now, do you think, and obviously Warrior was in WWF most of his career, looking back, do you think people will consider Sting to be the biggest star of the two?
In terms of longevity, absolutely. I don't know that Sting has ever reached that level of popularity that the Ultimate Warrior had in the WWF in 1990. I don't know that he ever got to there. I could be wrong. Maybe I'm mistaken about that. I don't know how you would measure such a thing, really. But I feel like in terms of the career that he had, you'd have to take Sting over Warrior. But if you're just talking about, like, the ultimate peak, I think I'd have to give the edge to Warrior. What do you think about that, Stro?
Well, I mean, it's so ironic that both these guys ended up being, like, really popular, you know, when they went out their own. And I mean, sure, Sting hasn't been in, like, a WrestleMania or anything like that yet. But, I mean, it's like, you know, Sting, you know, his popularity was just unbelievable. I mean, it was like international. I mean, all over. I mean, he would go to Japan, and they would and fuse like with the Great Muta. You know, they would love Sting then. So I mean, it was just you know, what I mean, they both paved their way. You know what I mean, in their own right.
What was the perception, Maestro? Was the perception of Sting, say in 1988, that he was going to be the guy in WCW, or do you think people lean more toward Lex Luger?
Oh,
or
Sting, yeah, Sting,
or somebody like that.
Sting, hands down was the guy. There, you know, I mean, he was, you know, he was the guy, and like, you know, Luger, you know, he made his own way in his own right, but I think they had another, you know, different direction for Luger, which, you know, we saw later on, so.
Now, would you put Sting ahead of, say, like, Barry Windham at that time period?
You know, that, it's a funny thing, you know, with Barry. Barry, I feel Barry was, he's very underrated during that time, and I really think that Barry should have been the guy to, you know, take the ball and run with it as far as, you know, holding the world championship and, you know, him. I mean, him and Sting should have been, in my estimation, the two top guys feuding for the title. Because, I mean, Barry was just, I mean, Barry could do it all. I mean, what a great wrestler.
Yeah, I mean, Derek, I'm curious your thoughts as well, but here's what I remember about Barry Windham. I remember Barry Windham as quite possibly the most talented, maybe, if not the most talented, certainly one of the most talented guys to never have a decent run with the heavyweight title. You know, I'd put him in that class with, like, Rick Rude and Kurt Hennig, if you don't count the AWA stuff, you know. I'd put Barry Windham right there, Derek. What do you think about that?
Here's a funny story about Barry Windham. I was first introduced to Barry Windham as the Stalker.
Right.
And I remember I was watching television one time with my dad, and my dad came in, he was watching Raw or something, and he has this look of disgust on his face, and I'm like, what's wrong? He goes, that's Barry Windham. I was like, who, the Stalker? And he's like, yeah. And I'm like, okay, what's the big deal? And he showed me some old tapes and, like, the stuff he did with Flair when he had him and him and Luger were a tag team before he joined the Horsemen, and the stuff he did after he joined the Horsemen. It was for him to be that big, he moved like a small guy. And other than Flair and Steamboat, he might have been the best wrestler in the world at that time. And you're absolutely correct. He should have been bigger. He's a big deal, but he should have been bigger than what he was. And I don't know if it was due to injury or what, but Barry Windham was amazing. He's amazing to watch. And I know he was in the ring with Flair, but he had a world title match with Flair, which is one of my favorite matches of all time. And I don't think he gets the credit he deserves for being so good in the ring.
Well, I'll tell you what, you actually bring up something that I would love to talk about. We got about 15 minutes left on the air here. Let me throw out the number if anyone else wants to get involved in this discussion. Toll-free, 855-VOC-RADIO. That's 855-862-7234. Brady Hicks here with the Maestro from WCW. And, Derek, we're talking WCW retro, circa mid to late 1980s here. And, guys, Derek, you brought up the point with Barry Windham as the Stalker. Maestro, why do you think it is that Barry Windham had to be a Widowmaker or a Stalker, and Dusty Rhodes had to wear polka dots, and Ricky the Dragon Steamboat needed a giant lizard to carry around? And, I mean, it goes on and on. And
Harley Race.
Race needed a plastic crown, for Christ's sake. I mean, why was that? Why was that, Maestro?
That's the WWE for you. Like I stated before earlier, they're a different breed of animal, and like, you know, during that time, it was very political, you know, and one was trying to get the best of the other, and you know, and when a WCW guy went to a WWE territory, you know, it, you know, I mean, it was what it was.
It reminds me, Derek, you're probably the only person listening right now that could appreciate what I'm about to say, but the WWF, even to this day, reminds me of like Coach Andy Reid of the NFL in a way. Like, I can remember this guy. He would draft a defensive end and turn him into a middle linebacker because he needed a middle linebacker instead of just drafting a friggin' middle linebacker. But that's what they did. You know, if you want to hire Hardy Race, he doesn't need to be a king. Get someone else to be a king.
I mean, look what they did with Terry Funk, and, you know, they gave him a fake Funk brother. Like, it seems like it seems like the only guys that Vince took care of from WCW and NWA were the guys that NWA couldn't make stars. Like, he turned Oz into Diesel. He turned,
right,
you know, he turned the Diamond Stud into Razor Ramon, which was kind of the same thing. But if you came there established as a big name, he ruined you, and I think it was just his way of going, I can either make you or break you, because there was no reason for Dusty Rhodes to have on polka dots. You know, it was ridiculous.
Right.
I mean, the only guy that he kind of got from the NWA that didn't do anything was Ronnie Garvin, and I don't really like Ronnie Garvin.
He ruined him too.
I don't get the guy, but you know, it was just his way of going, I'm Vince, I'm bigger than you. Put on these polka dots, Dusty.
Well, there is one name, though, that you overlooked that I think was treated very well by the WWF when he came in and is still, to a certain extent, revered to this day, and Ric Flair. I mean,
okay.
He let Ric Flair be Ric Flair. For at least a year, he let Ric Flair do all the same stuff that he was doing. In fact, there are some people that say that 1992 Ric Flair was every bit as anything that he did with the Horsemen in the 80s.
Yeah, I mean, some of that stuff was great. Or you can take, you know, Dustin Rhodes, and when he was in WCW, he was the Natural. He was having great matches with Steve Austin and Shane Douglas. And then he comes to WWF, and they put him in gold paint, and they call him Goldust. And it succeeded.
Right.
I don't know if they knew it was going to succeed at the time, but you're right, Flair is pretty, but I think Ric Flair was bigger than all that. I don't think you could have brought Flair in and tried to, you know, make him something stupid because the crowd wouldn't allow it.
Now, Maestro, what do you think, what gimmick would you have taken had the WWF called and said, would it have been anything? Would you have said okay to just about anything?
I probably would see what they would have to offer first.
Okay. Yeah, you don't want to end up as the next Adrian Adonis, you know?
Oh my goodness! I think him and Jesse Ventura one time had a brief run with the NWA when they were teaming together.
Right. It's I'm going to go out on a limb here. I'm not very familiar with it, but I'm going to go out on a limb that the Adrian Adonis that teamed with Jesse Ventura in the NWA wasn't the same one we saw fighting Rowdy Roddy Piper at WrestleMania 3.
Oh, no. Now he looked like a biker.
Oh.
Yeah, him and Justin Ventura both look like badass bikers.
I'm sure they were incredible. I'll have to try and find that stuff. Listen, guys, we got about 10 minutes left here. We're talking WCW from the 1980s, the old NWA, the Jim Crockett, all that fun stuff. We're talking memories, some of our favorite wrestlers, some of our favorite matches. And I mentioned as my favorite match earlier, Derek, that it would have to be the dog collar match between Rowdy Roddy Piper and Greg Valentine from Starrcade, the first one.
Mm. Now, didn't Piper like disfigure his ear or like lose hearing in one of his ears because of that match?
I believe he's deaf in one ear because he took a chain shot from Greg Valentine.
Mm. Okay.
I could be wrong about that, but I believe I've heard that. And we were talking, too, as well about some of the brutality from that era. The NWA doing things that were extreme long before ECW popped up.
Yeah, I remember two things that stick out. When the Road Warriors turned on Dusty Rhodes and they, like, took a spike from the shoulder pads and they dug it in his eye.
Oh,
I
yeah.
That.
Oh.
And I also remember...
Gross.
Yes. Oh, I remember the Horsemen attacking the Rock and Roll Express, and Flair took out, I think it was Ricky, and he broke his nose, and he smeared his nose across the floor, and it was blood all over the floor. Or when they attacked Dusty Rhodes and, you know, broke his arm with the bat. And so many things that they did that I don't think they get credit for, but if Paul Heyman would have did it, and everybody would have been like, oh, my God, it's so innovative. But a lot of that stuff came from the NWA.
Oh, absolutely.
Well, I do think part of the problem is that the eyes of the world were watching the Rock and Wrestling Connection at the time. And that's
yeah.
the issue. WCW, the NWA, whatever it was technically at the time, I guess it was the NWA, they had their fan base, you know, their dedicated fan base. But I feel like kind of everybody, whether you were a WCW fan or not, kind of everybody still kept their eye on what the WWF was doing, but it wasn't necessarily vice versa.
No, I think those people in Georgia and around that area, I think they loved the NWA. Rick, on the Rise and Fall of WCW DVD, Ric Flair always says if they would have stayed in Georgia and that surrounding area in Chicago, they would still be in business today because that's how much people loved them.
Do you think that's the case, Maestro? Like, if they had just maybe stayed regional in those couple states, maybe Jim Crockett Promotions would still be going strong.
Oh, absolutely. When they tried to expand and, you know, go to places that they weren't very well known for, that was pretty much their undoing, you know?
Very interesting. I mentioned earlier, I don't think you were on the air with us, Derek, but, like, growing up in Philadelphia, that was always, like, an NWA/WCW stronghold, kind of like Baltimore and Washington, D.C. They were very strong markets for the company, which is surprising. You wouldn't think that necessarily for a more northern city, but they were always very well received there.
Yeah, it's funny because when my dad and my mom moved to New York from Georgia, my dad told me they had a bunkhouse stampede match up here at the Coliseum one year. And in my head, I'm thinking, like, they had a bunkhouse stampede in the middle of Long Island? Like, that's completely, like, it makes no sense. I don't know, and it was so much different than what WWE was doing. Or WWF at the time, but I think they came up here and people just didn't accept it because it wasn't the big guys, you know, flexing Hulk Hogan entertainment stuff. It was actual wrestling, and they couldn't get into it.
And that is, of course, Maestro, years before the Blacktop Bully wrestling on a flatbed.
Right.
Is it safe to say, guys, that The NWA should be remembered for all, and WCW as well. And I really do mean WCW more than the overall NWA. But Jim Crockett, WCW, I'm sorry if I'm mixing my terms up, but is it safe to say that they should be remembered for trying to be innovative in so many different ways? Some worked, some didn't, but all were memorable in a way, Maestro.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, they're way ahead of their time. A lot of stuff they did, and they don't get enough credit for.
Well, what do you think, Derek? I mean, this time period, the 1980s, Jim Crockett Promotions, I mean, they're throwing two rings in an arena at the same time, you know? We're having bunkhouse brawls. We're trying things that the WWF wouldn't try because they were too busy trying to put together a 12-foot high, thick blue steel cage in a half an hour.
I mean, you would turn on WWF and you'd see Hulk Hogan versus King Kong Bundy. Or, you know, something like that. And then you'd turn on NWA and you'd see, you know, the Rock and Roll Express versus the Midnight Express. Or you'd see, you know, the Road Warriors or Magnum TA. They definitely had the better roster at that point. The rosters weren't even close. I think they don't get the respect they deserve, as, you know, because WWF kind of won the war towards the end. And, you know, whoever wins the war controls history. But I think, if you look at ECW, it's a lot of NWA there. When TNA first came out and they were real exciting, there was a lot of NWA. And there's still some NWA in WWE now. I mean, Evolution is a ripoff of the Four Horsemen. Like, nobody can tell me. I don't care if it's five guys and it's four or five guys. They're a ripoff of the Horsemen. So there's a little bit of NWA sprinkled everywhere today. And I think they should get a little bit more credit than they do. But, hey, for the winners go to spoilers, right?
Yeah, no, you're right about that. And I, you know, one of our callers on In the Room a couple weeks ago, Wayne, brought up this idea that the Shield is like the Fabulous Freebirds of today, you know, and
yep.
They just continue to take these ideas that worked on a smaller scale and do them much less effectively in front of a much larger audience. It's an amazing thing. I can remember, not the period that we're talking about, and certainly not today's modern era, but I want to say like 1997, 1996, 1997, the WWF actually brought in very briefly, they introduced it as the NWA North American heavyweight title, but they were actually having an NWA title, and NWA tag team champions as well, were being defended each week on Raw, you know? But never quite given the respect, Maestro, you know, never quite. How can you talk about the great lineage of the NWA and only go so far back as Jeff Jarrett and the Rock and Roll Express that currently have those respective titles?
Well, you know, that was WWE for you, you know, that
yeah.
They, you know, it's their world, their rules. So.
And looking back on it as well, I will say, knowing what I know now about the WWF at the time, who was pulling strings, who was influential to Vince McMahon at the time, I would assume a lot of that was Jim Cornette. And his ideas probably kind of fell on deaf ears. Do you think that's a safe assumption, Maestro?
Oh, absolutely! I remember what he went through with TNA. I can only imagine what WWE was like for him. Oh man, dear Lord.
Well, you know, we got about 90 seconds left. I feel like in the beginning I struggled, but like this is all coming very easily because it's an interesting thing, and I certainly would love to be back on the show in the future, Derek. We got about a minute left. Any thoughts? Closing thoughts on Jim Crockett Promotions, that era of WCW.
It was great. I'm probably going to get off the line and watch some old Bash, you know, some old, I don't know, maybe I'll watch an old Starcade. But I'm glad we have this show now, because now I can talk about all this useless WCW NWA knowledge I have. Like, I can't wait to talk about the Hollywood Blondes and, you know, all that other crazy stuff in the early 90s. So But I enjoyed the NWA. And if anybody who has the network, you should check it out. Some great stuff.
Very good. Maestro, awesome. Closing thoughts. Jim Crockett Promotions. I'm sure we'll deal with it in the future as well. But for tonight, we got about 30 seconds left.
You know, great memories, great times. Great time to be a wrestling fan. You know, great legends. It was emergence of future great legends. And innovators for, you know, what was ahead for them.
Truly innovation, absolutely. Thank you, everyone, for checking out WCW Retro this week. We'll be back on the air next week. Dan Colachico will be back, from what I hear. The Maestro, hopefully I didn't scare him away this week. Derek, you're always welcome. You're probably more welcome than I am at this point, just because of all the insight you offered tonight. Thank you, everybody. Be sure to check out His Dork World, Her Dork World at 12 o'clock tonight. Lots of great shows on the network. I'm trying to think. You probably will next hear from me Monday night. I forget to check with you if you're around, Derek, but we're doing Rub Roll if you're there.
All right. I'll probably be a little liquored up, but for Memorial Day, but I'll be there.
I would expect nothing less. Thank you for checking out WCW Retro right here on the VOC Nation Radio Network. We'll see you guys next time.
Systems operating within normal design parameters. Engage cybernetic generation sequence. Malfunction detected. System overload. Systems operating within normal design parameters. Engage cybernetic generation sequence. Malfunction detected. System overload. Operating within normal design parameters. Engage cybernetic generation sequence. Malfunction detected. System overload.